Hello and welcome to the 51 Minutes of Heaven we call the D1 Baseball Podcast. I am your host, Michael Patrick Rooney. Tonight's podcast brought to us by our friends at Driveline. Driveline offers a variety of training, education, software, and hardware solutions for both players and coaches. Coaches, if you're overwhelmed by collecting different data sources, mass athlete programming, and third-party analytic insights, here's what you do. You call Driveline. You can email them at drivelinebaseball.com. Get yourself set up with your own custom player development bundle on the Track platform. Look into Driveline certification that will empower you to run Driveline-type training, pitch design, and or biomechanical data collection with products like the Pulse Workload Monitor. And you guys can probably tell I'm on the excitement level. I'm probably a 15 out of 10. Yeah. And that is because this is a special podcast. My two friends that are joining me tonight, one is a gentleman that has been accused, and very, very apropos for tonight's subject matter, he's been accused in the past of being biased. And that's the great Aaron Fitt. Fitzy, how are we doing tonight?
Biased as ever, Runes. Ready to go. I hate all your team. Wait, am I stealing somebody else's shtick here? I'm sorry.
That's right. Bring in
you hate teams too.
Yes.
I do.
And that third voice you hear is the Darth Vader of college baseball. A man that only loves three things: his family, Johnny Manziel, and the Snow Leopard softball organization. Ooh. He hates everything and every other team. That is the great Kendall J. Rogers.
You forgot
Kendall?
The Republic of Texas, though.
Yes, that's right. Speaking of, look at that segue, KR. Look at you.
That's
planting
assumed.
Seeds.
You know, it's kind of funny you mentioned that I hate teams because my wife always knows it was when it's about to be baseball season because she scrolled down her Twitter feed on my mentions and it was all about me hating teams. So that's how she knows. That's actually the only way she knows the top 25 is on the way.
Kendall, you're the most underrated part of your game. I think your GIF. Now, this may be a controversial take. Okay. The first of many tonight. I think your GIF game is very underrated. I think it's strong. The GIF you posted on top of my GIF today, very good.
So I'm not good at a lot of things, calculus being one of them, but I'm good at GIFs, and I feel like I have a pretty good sense of humor on Twitter.
Yes.
I would say you have the best GIF game on the staff. Second. Should we just do the whole power rankings? I have the worst GIF game. I'm at the bottom. I've got no GIF game. None.
You're a purist, Fitzy. I see that you GIF kind of begrudgingly. I don't think your heart's in it.
That's exactly right.
I feel like Runes gets the Hart Award. I get the GIF Award. Eric gets the Most Interesting Man Award. We'll wait until the year to hand out all these awards.
Yes, I love it. All right, gentlemen, the topic of tonight's podcast, by the time the listeners hear this, our top 25 will have dropped. And we are really excited to announce that our top 25 this year is sponsored by Netting Professionals. These guys are awesome. Netting Pros, they specialize in the design, fabrication, and installation of custom netting for college baseball programs all around the country. Next time your field or facility needs something new, make sure you check out Netting Pros. I don't know how else to say it, guys. Netting Pros is just awesome. They love our sport. They love baseball. They support their support level is an easy 80, and we want to encourage everyone to support them back. These guys are all in on college baseball. So, gentlemen, the top 25, it's locked and loaded. It's on the website when this reaches people's ears. Let's just get into it. The number one team in the land, Kendall, do you want to lead us in the song?
That would get me in probably some trouble.
That's right. You're not allowed to sing that song, Kendall.
I will not that far, but I will tell you,
please.
I think when it comes to the number one team in the country, I think when you look back at the College World Series last year, I think everybody would agree that, Texas was just a couple of hits away from, potentially playing for a national championship. And, NC State advanced, they would have been playing for a national championship. So that's how close those guys were to potentially winning a seventh national championship. And I think we look at Texas in the offseason, this is a hungry team. This is a team that, they lost Ty Madden, but you look at the offensive lineup, getting Ivan Melendez back for another year, I think was kind of icing on the cake for this team. I think I think getting Melendez back kind of changes the complexion of the entire team. I think if you take him out of that lineup, you're starting to look at that UT lineup going, okay, where's the power going to come from? But with him in there, and you got him nestled around guys like Austin Tye, Trey Faltini, you know, has a little bit of juice in the bat. I mean, he had 5 home runs last year, double digit doubles. You know, you put him in that lineup and it just changes everything about that lineup. And so I think when you look at the balance offensively, you look at getting Tristan Stevens back. We talk so much about the prospects, but as we were talking about on the group chat earlier, when you look at college baseball, what's also so important, it's those guys with a lot of experience, a hard-nosed approach, and they've got a great track record in college baseball. That would be Tristan Stevens. And I think when you, with him, supremely talented, Tanner Witt, Pete Hansen potentially is your Sunday starter. I mean, he's a guy that could be a top 2 or 3 round pick. That's just a really good rotation. And so I think when you combine the intangibles with this team, with the lineup, with the starting rotation, I do think outside of Aaron Nixon, I do think Texas does have some roles to kind of figure out bullpen wise. But I tell you what, if you have the talent and all you're trying to figure out is the roles and everything else looks great, you're in a really good spot. And I think that's why we all kind of decided on Texas as the number one team in the land.
Yeah. If I was going to nitpick Texas, I wish they weren't so right-handed. I mean, they are extremely right-handed, but everything you just mentioned, KR, is spot on. Like, they're just really strong in all areas. Hey, even at third base where they have to replace somebody, they get Skylar Messenger. That's, you know, like you could argue they might've got a little bit better. They certainly got better defensively there. So Fitzy, what do you got on Texas? Was that a hard choice for you, or did you come to that fairly quickly?
Felt like the obvious choice. We spent about 3 seconds debating it, I think, in our meeting. I mean, it was really not it was kind of a slam dunk, you know, and just like last year, I think we had more discussion last year with Florida versus UCLA. And of course we were wrong on both of those, but everyone was. This year, it just felt like it's a kind of a no brainer. I just feel like the pitching really sets them apart, in my opinion. I feel like it reminds me of like an old school, like, well, not old school, I guess it depends how old you are, but like the vintage, like mid aughts, you know, Augie Garrido, like 2005 era Texas teams, right? Where it's just like built around really good pitching and just rock solid all over the diamond. I mean, they don't have to hit a ton of home runs. That's not how, you know, Texas traditionally has been built, but they do have some pop in here and just feels like a versatile, deep, balanced, well, not maybe not balanced, because you're right, the right-handed thing is a factor, but it's a deep quality lineup. It's going to play great defense. They've got a lot of experience. I mean, those outfielders have been around a long time. They're athletic. I like this team a lot, but just the pitching, when you look at all the other teams probably in our top 5 or 10, you know, there's just not a lot of proven experienced workhorse starters, even among the other teams we like, and so that really stands out here.
Yeah, the other thing too I was going to say real quick is, you know, Skylar Messenger, you know, Fit kind of touched on him, but, you know, the grad transfer from Kansas, you know, one thing that's really interesting about Skylar is you look at his frame, he's 6'3", 225, and you would automatically think you'd go look at the stat line and go, oh, this guy must have a lot of home runs. And I think he hit 3 home runs last year at Kansas. He hit for a lot of power the day I was there in the fall. The Troy Tulowitzki, their hitting coach, told me that he hit with power throughout the fall. So, you know, keep an eye on him as a power producer. And I will say this. So if I'm going to nitpick as well, keep an eye on the first base position, because, you know, people forget over the last few years that even though he started out a little sluggish over there, Zach Zubia ended up being a very good defensive first baseman. And you're moving Ivan Melendez from the hot corner, where he's a little iffy, over to a brand new position. I mean, that's not a total comfort zone thing for Ivan. So, you know, keep an eye on that first base position, because it is important. You know, people often forget about the position, but it's pretty important to have a very, very stable first baseman.
Yeah, I agree. That's Zach Zubia was a very steady, you knew what you're getting every day player for Texas. Hey, Fitzy, I'm going to come to you on this next. So to me, the next group we spent a considerable amount of time on, but let me start with framing it this way. Do you feel like the 2 through 4, Arkansas, Vandy, Hale State, is the next tier? Or would you snake like Ole Miss, maybe even Stanford in that tier? Or did it feel 2 through 4 felt slightly separate to you?
For me, it was 2 through 5. I would put Ole Miss in that group. And really the reason Ole Miss is probably at the back of that group is just frankly track record. You know, it's those other teams are proven, you know, Omaha caliber teams, and Ole Miss, none of these kids have been there. And, you know, certainly the pitching, I personally think that Ole Miss has a really good top 6 arms. You know, I saw all those guys, I think, in my fall stop and walked away thinking, okay, you know, I mean, you don't need a ton of arms, and they do have depth behind those guys. But if you got 6 guys that you feel like you can build your staff around in the rotation in the bullpen, and I think they do, I think they have 6 good ones, then you're in great shape. And they've got their entire offense back. One of the most explosive offenses in the country last year. I mean, I think Ole Miss is really good. And, you know, try to separate them on paper from those other three teams, Mississippi State, Vanderbilt, Arkansas. I think it's hard to do. I mean, you could shake those four up in any order, and I wouldn't necessarily argue with you. But I do feel like, for me, I feel like Arkansas has the highest upside of this group, but it's close. I mean, they're all really close.
I came into the conversation. Let me say it this way. I did not come into the conversation anticipating landing with Arkansas at number two. I didn't see that coming. Were you guys surprised that we landed there, or did you see that coming from the jump?
For me, I mean, I had them number two on my board,
but
when we started the conversation, I don't think you guys were necessarily with me on that.
Yeah, I was not. Yeah, I wasn't there yet. Kendall, how about you? Did that surprise you to land Arkansas at number two?
No, not at all. I just think when you look at this program, you know, just in general, I mean, they've been knocking on the door for years. I think when you look at the pitching and the front end of the rotation, you know, Peyton Paulette, you know, you could really look back when it comes to even looking ahead to this season. You could look back at the MRI he had at the end of last year as maybe the most important news for this upcoming season, because I think if you don't have him, kind of like we were talking about Melendez in Texas, I think if you don't have Peyton Paulette with his Arkansas team, I think the complexion of this rotation is a little different for the Hogs. So I think when you have a guy like that who was electric at times last year, Jackson Wiggins is certainly a big time arm who just needs to kind of put his secondary stuff together, but it's all there. Right. And so you've got two ultra talented, you know, weekend starters with all that firepower offensively. It doesn't really shock me. They're just a machine at this point, much like Mississippi State.
They're just, I think it's going to be as it was last year. You know, it's funny. I thought they had the best offensive team and the best defensive team in the country last year. And even after losing, you know, some pieces there, I mean, you lost Opitz behind the plate and, you know, Christian Franklin center field. I mean, they lost a few guys, but even despite that, I think they got a chance to still be the best offensive team and the best defensive team in the country. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, like the pieces that they bring back, you know, obviously you've got your All-America guys with Robert Moore and Caden Wallace. But you know, Jalen Battles back at shortstop was huge for them. So they're still rock solid up the middle. And then you add these four-year transfers, you know, we've talked about before, Michael Turner behind the plate, huge get, Jace Borafin and Chris Lanzilli. And, you know, and then you add in a superstar freshman like Peyton Sovall. That's a ridiculously good lineup. I mean, good luck, you know, and they're deep off the bench. The only question is the pitching. I mean, do they, you know, they've got so much talent on the mound, so much talent, but those guys do have to prove themselves. We're obviously buying in. We've got them ranked number two in the country. But I think the depth of that staff is absurd. And I think they'll be able to piece it together. And I think you throw a Hagan Smith in there as a true freshman, who I think is just going to be a superstar and hit the ground running. I think that's huge for him.
It's so interesting. I look at these SEC schools at the top here, Mississippi State, Vandy, Arkansas, and they're recruiting at such a high level right now. I mean, think about this. Like, we've got Mississippi State and Vandy in the top four in the country. And in theory, they're either replacing most of their rotation or all of their rotation, depending on how you look at it. And, you know, the way it's going to project out. But they're, again, they've got so much talent that's just coming in the door to back it up. I mean, you know, Vandy is possibly going to throw a freshman in Carter Holton on Friday night. And I actually felt like that was not a mark against them. It was a mark for them. That's how much I believe in Carter Holton. So, or at least what I know about him so far. So yeah, I think these next three, you make a great point about Ole Miss, Fitzy, like, hey, Coastal Carolina won a national title with basically six arms, right? Like I never counted them, but it didn't feel like more than six.
Yeah.
Most teams do.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about the national champs, guys.
Please.
Yeah, Mississippi State. You know, this is, you know, Aaron saw them in the fall, but this is a really interesting team to me. I think, you know, I had somebody ask me the other day, you know, this team without Tanner Allen. And in a typical season, like, I'd be a little concerned if you lost a guy with A, that much firepower, and B, that much of a leader. But I do think when you look at this Mississippi State team, you know, you get Logan Tanner back, you get Luke Hancock back, Brad Cumbus is, you know, he may not be the best player on the team, but he'll hit for a solid average. He's a really good leader. Kellum Clark last year, if you remember, in Omaha, had some big hits for them. And so I think they have plenty of leadership. They have plenty of guys that have had production in the past. And I think for me, and Aaron can kind of speak on this a little bit because he saw him in the fall, but what's fascinating to me is to see how the week in rotation sets up, because right now they've got Landon Sims and Preston Johnson slated to be in the week in rotation. Obviously Preston was amazing out of the bullpen in Omaha last year. You know, how does he make that transition? But I really think this Mississippi State team is looking for a guy like, you know, Jackson Frisso to step up. I mean, there were times last year where he was really good, and there were times last year where he was a typical young pitcher. And so I think it's one of the situations. I think if Jackson steps up, I think one of these two relievers kind of steps out and goes back to that bullpen role, but we'll see what they end up doing.
Yeah. And they're, you know, it's kind of like Arkansas, where you've got a ton of really good arms, and it's just a matter of figuring out where they all slot in. And in some ways, you know, Arkansas was like that last year. Old Mississippi State last year, it felt like you had more your traditional, at least heading into the season, more your traditional weekend rotation kind of structured. But you know, you take Christian McLeod out, and now it's like, okay, we've got Sims. We're gonna slide into that role. I think he'll do just fine. We've talked about this, I think, before in the podcast. But I mean, he's been extended before. He's just dominant. He's just a badass. It doesn't matter what role you put him in. That guy's a badass. Sign me up for Landon Sims as a Friday night starter. And then, you know, I'm a big time believer in Parker Stinnett. I mean, I saw him just lights out in the Fall World Series in Starkville this year. It was probably the best breaking ball I saw all fall. I mean, just a hammer. And you know, mid 90s heat. And it feels like the command has come. Like, that guy's ready to take on a bigger role. You know, they don't even necessarily need Fristo to be a weekend starter. Like, they could have, They could have Sims, Preston Johnson, and Parker Stinnett. That's your weekend rotation, and they'd be fine. Maybe Johnson slides back to the bullpen. Who knows? They've got options. They've got the luxury of depth here. And so it's kind of like Arkansas, where you're just kind of betting on the depth of that staff, and you trust the roles will settle in some way. But boy, again, really love the position player group. I mean, I don't even think you mentioned Logan Tanner. Maybe the best, probably for my money, is the best catcher in the country. All in on Logan Tanner, you know, as a two-way catcher, right? A guy that defense and offense, I think he's a huge superstar. But you know, there's just, you add a couple of these transfer guys, the RJ Yeagers and the Jess Davises, just bolster that lineup. All these teams, a lot of them anyway, did really well in the transfer market to help plug some holes. And that makes a difference here.
Yeah. Hey, Kendall, give me your, so let's not gloss over Vandy. And Vandy's a very interesting team. They could have easily been number one too, right? Like, we could have gone a million different directions with this. What was what's kind of your takeaway from Vandy, KR?
Well, I'm actually really interested to see what Dominique Keegan does behind the plate. You know, this is a guy that has certainly been a successful hitter, and, you know, has been at first base and some other positions and designated hitter, but, you know, he moves behind the plate with CJ gone, and I'm really intrigued to see what he does back there. You know, some people I've talked to said he looks really good back there, and some people I've talked to have some uncertainties about it. So I'm kind of curious to see how that unfolds. But I think when you look at this team overall, you know, getting Javier Vaz, a senior, it'll be interesting to see if he can take a big step forward. You know, getting Enrique Bradfield back, you know, Spencer Jones is a tall drink of water in the batter's box, and he certainly has a lot of potential. And you know, you get guys like, you know, Tate Colwick and Parker Nolan back. I mean, this is a really, really solid lineup. It's going to be really interesting to me to see, you know, how the pitching unfolds. I think when you look at, you know, back at last year, you know, I saw Christian Little and Hoover, and it was a mixed bag. You know, it was a guy that, you know, the first two innings was 93-96 with a big time slider, and then all of a sudden after two or three innings he lost it a little bit. And so I think the Christian Little for me is really kind of the most interesting guy. I mean, I think he's one of those guys that has a potential. I mean, I don't know if I want to say Jack Leiter or Kumar Rocker, but he has a potential to be a big time pitcher. And I think they need a guy for them to do what they want to do. I think they need a guy to continue to take that progression, much like those young Vandy pitchers always seem to do under Scott Brown. Like, every single year they tend to get better and better and better, sometimes exponentially. And I think he's one of those guys that could do that.
I'll tell you guys, for me with Vandy, that my first concern is Carter Young. If you remember the first half of last year,
yeah,
I thought Carter Young was spectacular. Now, he did punch out a lot, but it was a lot of bombs. And gosh, he was a shorthanded defender. I mean, just really an elite defender. Shorthanded is selling him short. And he just won the same in Omaha with that shoulder. And he didn't play this fall. It does sound like he's going to be fine. But, you know, that's something, because, you know, they've got that exciting freshman, Davis Diaz, where, you know, Carter Young and Davis Diaz playing back, you know, in the middle infield, that could be the most dynamic middle infield in the country, certainly in the conversation. So you're right, Kendall, like, they're one of those programs where we know they've got a ton of talent on the mound. does it emerge? You know, who steps forward? Any one of these arms, any school in the country would have killed to have the arms that Vandy has, you know, in that stable for Scott Brown. But who makes the jump year over year? So, you know, we talked about Vandy, we talked about Ole Miss. I'm going to make a comment, guys. Then we'll go to 6 through 10. I'm very proud of this because we just ranked SEC teams 2 through 5. And it's very easy in this situation to get a little SEC gun shy. Like, hey, are we totally drunk on this league? And are we overdoing it? And I don't believe we are. It's the best league from a talent perspective. It just is. It's like they're recruiting like crazy. They've got the best dudes. And so I don't know if you guys would care to comment there, but I love that we didn't back off there.
I agree. I mean, it's, again, what else can you say? Just look at the track record in recent years. I mean, we had an all SEC final last year. It wasn't the first time. I mean, this is, you know, every year these teams are doing it. And yeah, it's crazy. It's crazy how good that league is, but you're right. Also Runes. I mean, the stuff you were saying about Vanderbilt a minute ago, you talk about the pitchers, right? It's like crazy good arms. Anyone would love to have them, just need a couple to emerge. It's kind of the same thing we were just saying about Arkansas and Mississippi State, right?
Like, yeah,
it's
exactly. Just
very, very similar. All these teams with kind of the things that are their obvious strengths. All these teams are really good in the lineup, have a lot of talent on the mound, just a matter of how it shakes out. And we're obviously buying the talent.
Yep. Hey boys, let's go 6 through 10. And KR, start with you. Give me a team from 6 through 10 that really jumped out at you. So Stanford, Oklahoma State, LSU, Florida, NC State. Who jumps out at you from that group, KR?
Yeah, you know what? I think, well, I'll let somebody else talk about LSU since I saw them in the fall, but I think the team that's really interesting to me, that I'm just very fascinated to see how they play this spring is NC State. I mean, this is a team that, you know, we don't need to rehash it, but went through a lot last year, especially at the end of the year. But, you know, you look at NC State, they retooled their offensive lineup. You look at their pitching staff with Sam Highfield, Matt Willetson, Chris Villeman. I mean, you could argue that the 1 and 2 and the closer there is as good as anybody in the country. And so when you combine those guys with, you know, granted they lost some guys offensively, but with, you know, the return of, you know, some of their, you know, their better hitters, Devontae Brown's back, you know, Dom Pololi was injured at Charlotte last year, but, you know, is supposedly healthy now and kind of fills a void. Geno Groover from Charlotte's a talented player. You know, Josh Hood has a limited track record, but when he was at Penn, and I think the Cape, I think in the summer after, he did a really nice job offensively. Then you throw a guy like JT Jarrett, who's got some innings under his belt as a starting position player. You know, that's a solid lineup. And again, 1-2 closer role. I feel really good about NC State. I'm just intrigued to see kind of like what is the clubhouse makeup of this team? You know, do they come out the spring with their hair on fire? Or do they come out the opposite? I'm just really intrigued. But I think this is going to be a really good team again.
Well, for me, the only reason that they weren't a top five team was because you probably look at it, a freshman catcher and a freshman shortstop. Yeah. And I really like both those freshmen, especially the shortstop. But I mean, it's still a question mark, you know, and, mm-hmm. and those are two positions where you like to have some experience. So, but otherwise I'm with you. I mean, I think they did a really good job in the transfer market. And certainly the core of that pitching staff is strong. I mean, they're, for me, I think they're the team to be in the ACC, but those teams are all pretty bunched together between, especially at the top. I think if you look at our rankings, it's NC State, it's Florida State and Notre Dame. You know, they all have different strengths. I mean, Florida State for me is a team that could have been certainly higher, not to get ahead of ourselves here in this discussion, Runes, but the pitching really stands out for Florida State.
Sure does.
And Notre Dame position player group, once again, very strong. The same basically group as last year, except for Nico Cavada. So the ACC race is going to be fascinating. I think it's wide open, but I do feel like NC State is just a tick ahead of everybody.
Hey, and to use your phrase from earlier, Fitzy, like NC State has earned the benefit of track record, right? Like I know that them getting to Omaha was somewhat surprising last year, but man, they're knocking on the door every year. They're in a regional every year in an era where that's almost impossible to do. So yeah, it makes it very easy to believe in that program. So Fitzy, why don't you pick another program or another team from that 6 through 10 range that you really like?
Yeah, for me, Oklahoma State is the one that I was probably higher on than the group. Like I might've had them as high as number 3 or 4 on my board heading into this thing. Really, really like Oklahoma State's team. I just think that, you know, the pitching staff for one thing stands out again, because we're looking for proven commodities. We're looking for guys with experience here. I like third year guys that are coming into their own. You already have Justin Campbell, who's a proven All-American ace. There's not a lot of those in the country, right? But then you add a Bryce Osmond, who's a third year guy now, and Cale Davis. Those are both big time recruits that have gotten better. They have developed, especially in the fall, both those guys. I know Osmond had an uneven career considering his prospect pedigree. Even in the summer when I saw him, it was like, same kind of guy. And then in the fall, I saw him again and it was like, whoa, all right, this is the guy we've been waiting to see. And so if he can carry that over, and then you got Victor Medeiros from Miami, who for me is very similar to like a Jackson Wiggins, right? It's just overpowering pure power coming at you, four pitch mix like Wiggins. It's all there, physical, durable build. It's just, can the command, can he show that starter command just like Wiggins? I think he can. Depth of this roster is bonkers. To me, it's very similar to Arkansas. Super, super deep on the mound and in the position player group. I think Nolan McLean has made my favorite superstar breakout pick in the whole country. I mean, really, like, if I could buy stock in this guy, boy, oh boy, I'm buying it all. Really, really like this guy. I think he's going to hit a ton of home runs there. He's going to play great third base. He's a great athlete. Very exciting talent. But there's a lot of athleticism and balance on this roster. I like the freshman group added in there, but also the veteran kind of program guys like Jake Thompson, who's just, I think, a really underrated, winner. There's a lot to like about this team. I think this will be Josh Holliday's best team at Oklahoma State. They're an Omaha club. Put it on the board.
Book it. I love it. That, and what you said, Fitzy, that really jumped out is the depth of Oklahoma State. Like, that really stands out to me. I'll do the obligatory West Coast program. Stanford's a program I'm going to write up. And, I had that super regional last year where they went down to Lubbock and it looked like, oh man, Stanford's going to miss Omaha again. They caught another bad break and they just went down there and housed Texas Tech. I mean, you never see teams go down to Lubbock and handle Texas Tech like that. And they did it 24-3 over those two games. Now, the big concern with Stanford is losing Brendan Beck. I mean, he was just phenomenal. But man, if you really look at it, it was a very young team that went to Omaha last year. Brock Jones, the center fielder, not playing football anymore. This kid's got first round pick written all over him, 18 home runs and 14 steals last year. Middle of the field, left-handed bat. Here's the thing, guys. If you believe that the biggest jump a college baseball player makes is between freshman and sophomore year, then look out for Stanford, because they had a really talented freshman class last year that kind of got their teeth kicked in, but they hung in there. They took a lot of punches, and Tommy Troy, Drew Bowser, all those pitchers. Drew Dowd is a name that you got to remember. They've got a true freshman, Braden Montgomery, who's a two-way player, center fielder, switch hitter, and he's up to 98 miles an hour on the mound, probably a reliever this year. So to be honest, guys, I started to feel a little antsy about Stanford at number six. That felt really aggressive. But the more I poured into their roster, the more I fell in love with it. And the more I feel like, hey, that's the best club on the West Coast. They've got Omaha pedigree. There's a lot of upside still left on this roster. And I think this is where they belong at the end of the day. KR, pick a team from 11 to 15. Let's keep moving.
11 to 15. I'm going to go with Texas Tech at 14. This is one of the most intriguing Texas Tech teams in a while. I feel like Texas Tech is typically one of those clubs that you look at on paper and you're like, okay, I have a pretty good idea of what to expect here. But I don't really have a great idea of what to expect here. I think a lot of Texas Tech is, based on the fact that Tim Tadlock always seems to reload. The comp I've kind of made on them here with this year's team is Florida State under 11. I remember there were teams that 11 had that you looked at and you're kind of like, boy, like they don't look that great on paper. But you know what? At the end of the year, they were top 10, top 15. I kind of think Texas Tech kind of fits that mold. But I think the biggest thing for me when I look at Texas Tech is, how does the weaker rotation pan out? I mean, you got Brandon Birtzel, who, we talked earlier about, Peyton Paulette at Arkansas and his injury issues and then getting over it. Brandon Birtzel was a guy that, going into the offseason, Texas Tech thought they probably would not have him in 2022. Now Brandon Birtzel's healthy, and he was up to 99 in the fall. The question with Brandon is, can he put all the secondary stuff together and become that Friday night starter they need him to be? Chase Hampton, he's a guy that you like. He's got big-time talent. He moves in that number two role. So, how do those two guys do? And then offensively, Texas Tech very, very seldom has question marks offensively. But you really, outside of Jace Young, I mean, you look at that lineup with, Cole Stillwell, good hitter, not a great hitter. Kurt Wilson, good hitter, not a great hitter. And Easton Morrell, same thing, right? And so you look at those hitters like that, Dylan Carter, and you go, okay, out of those guys, who's ready to take that kind of that big step forward and help Jace Young in that lineup? So those are the question marks for me. I just when I look at Tech though, like I just always feel like Tim's going to have that team ready to roll, and my mind hasn't changed with this club either. But there's definitely there's more question marks with this year's Tech team than they've had in, I don't know, 4 or 5 years, and that's why they're in the mid-teens, and that's probably being a little generous.
Yeah, it's the first tough offseason Tech's had in a long time. Usually they dominate the offseason with transfers and, you know, they do well in the draft. It's been a tougher one, but you're right. Everything you said, KR, I'm down for. Fitzy, I want to ask you a couple of questions. So I'm going to give you an observation on Florida State. I want to see if you're with me. So this is the program with all the pedigree, but, you know, it's not 11 anymore. It's junior. And man, they're just loading up on these arms. I mean, it's almost like the style of play is just kind of shifting over here a little bit, but yet all those things said, I feel like they're getting ready to go on a big run. Like, it just feels like there's a ton of talent just building there. What's your take on Florida State? Am I onto something or you got something different?
Yeah, you're spot on as always, Rune.
Yes.
Come on. I mean, you know, we wrote about it last year. We talked about it last year. Even heading into last season, they thought this had a chance to be their best, deepest pitching staff ever, as far as the sheer quality of power arms. But they didn't know, because a lot of them hadn't really performed yet. And then at the end of the year, you know, they're seventh in the country in ERA at Florida State, you know, and strikeout walk ratio, and, you know, fourth in the country in strikeouts per nine innings. I mean, like, it's an elite pitching staff at Florida State, an offensive ballpark, and a program that has not been built around that over the years, right? They've not been built around power arms or dominant pitching. They, you know, it's usually a strike throwing pitching staff. You got your thumb in, you know, Sean Gilmartin guys, and but you don't have a lot of these kind of dominant guys. And so now you bring back almost everybody on the staff. You've got Parker Messick and Bryce Hubbard. You know, Hubbard coming off a great summer. Messick was ACC pitcher of the year last year. And then you bring in a first round talent in Carson Montgomery, moving him up from probably the midweek starter job to probably Sunday. That's not even a guarantee, because they've got so much competition for that job. But, you know, that could very well be the best rotation in the country. And then you bring in another freshman who's a first round talent in Jackson Baumeister, who's probably going to be the Tuesday guy. I mean, the starting pitching there could very well be the best in the country, with Texas, maybe, you know, it's in that conversation with Texas. But I mean, the depth in that, and the bullpen, it just goes on and on and on. They have variety, they have power stuff, they have righties and lefties. And then you look in the lineup and it's like, okay, where's the star power, right? I mean, this is Florida State. You're used to them slugging and beating you over the head. And you take away Matthew Nelson and you take away, you know, Elijah Cabell and Robbie Martin. And who scares you here? Maybe there isn't somebody who does. But they did a good job shoring up that lineup. You throw in an Alex Terrell from Miami, who, you know, he didn't have a great year last year, but it's a proven power hitter in the ACC who feels like he's just born for Dick Houser Stadium with that left-handed swing in the short porch. It just feels like a perfect fit. And you throw in a Brett Roberts from Tennessee Tech, who I really like, is a kind of an athletic, like, just gritty, you know, versatile player who can move around the diamond. Just a really good kind of classic Florida State player, honestly, who's got experience. So you throw those two guys and then Jordan Kerrion at shortstop. I think they got better at shortstop by adding Jordan Kerrion. It's you know, it maybe it's not a lineup that's just like overwhelming you with star power, but Logan Lacy's a really good underappreciated player. He's probably their top returning hitter, and I just think it's a good balanced lineup. But they don't have to be a dominant lineup because they're going to be so good on the mound. So I'm with you. This is a team that I think is maybe even underranked where we have them, because I think the pitching is going to be so good that they could be one of the three or four best teams in the country.
So two more teams in this range, boys, I want to ask you about. So, and either one of you can take this. So I'm looking at East Carolina, and the question, I'm going to ask the question first, and let me give you a little context. The question is, why will this team be different? Because I feel like East Carolina is kind of stuck in this really good rut where they're awesome every year and don't get to Omaha. And they're literally the best program that hasn't been to Omaha. So in my mind, it's like they fly a little bit under the radar for how good they are. So I'm asking myself, why will this be the year? But then here's the other thing. I look at the Super Regionals they've lost. 2016 at Texas Tech, 2019 at Louisville, after they had a hellacious regional where they lost the first game, had to come all the way through. 2021 at Vandy. I mean, at Tech, at Louisville, at Vandy. I mean, those are top five programs in the last decade, you know, like those are the creme de la creme. So maybe I'm being too hard on East Carolina. So, but let me get back to my question. Either of you, why is this year different?
And I think, you know, also if they had hosted that regional against Louisville a few years ago, I think they feel like maybe it's a different outcome. And they were right on the, remember they were right on the cusp of being a top eight seed and they didn't get the nod. And so, you know, in some respects, maybe that's just a product of being in a mid-major conference. You got to be so dominant to be a top eight team in a mid-major conference. And last year also, I mean, they had a great year, hosted a regional, but couldn't get in that top eight. And it's just a little bit different going on the road. But I mean, the bottom line is this team, once again, it's, you know, it's a really good balanced East Carolina club. The one thing that they have though, is I think you've got, first of all, a true dominant number one that can match up with anybody. You know, you can match up with the Kamar Rocker if you're in a super regional, if you've got Carson Wisenhunt. You guys know how I feel about this guy. I mean, it's real, real stuff. I think he's a top 10 pick if he's healthy all year, which he wasn't really so much in the fall, you know, but I think it's, they were mostly just being cautious with him there. But I mean, you know, lefties that throw 90, 95 with command and have a premium changeup and a snapdragon breaking ball. There's a lot to like about that guy. I think he's a huge difference maker. A lot of times, you know, East Carolina, as good as they've been, they haven't had that guy. And so that's maybe one reason that it's a little bit different. And then, you know, at the back of the bullpen with CJ Mayhew, I mean, you got two bookends like that on your staff, boy, I feel really good about that.
Yeah. Hey, KR, before you take us to 16 to 20, I'm going to touch on real quick. Notre Dame is interesting because it was the most maximized roster I think we've seen in 10 years. Like they got every drop of talent out of that roster last year. And you alluded to it, Fitzy, lost big pieces, Joe Sheridan, Tanner Kohlhepp, Nico Cavadas. Nico Cavadas hit 22 home runs last year. That's a lot to lose. So Notre Dame's tough because do you trust last year's track record or are you swayed by the guys they lost? And I think that's why they end up in this range. But hey, you cannot forget they won the ACC by 4.5 games. I look at Arizona guys and, you know, a new coaching staff or a new coach in Chip Hale, who is a Hall of Famer at Arizona. They've got, I would counter Fitzy. I think Daniel Susak is right there with Logan Tanner as the best catcher in the country. That conversation can clearly be had. Arizona's got sneaky better pitching than you would assume they would have in Tucson. Mm-hmm. I think they're going to be very interesting. And by the way, they're the defending Pac-12 champions, not Stanford. So Kendall, take us into 16 to 20. Who's a club in the 16 to 20 range? By the way, a very interesting range that jumps out at you.
Yeah, I think TCU, I'm actually curious to get y'all's takes on Oregon State because that was a really interesting debate with the Beavers. But I'm going to choose TCU. I just think when you look at the Frogs overall, what's really interesting to me is obviously it's first year that Coach Sarlo Serra. Obviously, he was a heralded pitching coach. You know, how does he make that transition to being a head coach? It's going to be really interesting. But I think the biggest thing for me when I look at TCU, you know, they lost a lot of those super seniors offensively. They do get a guy like Braden Taylor back, who for my money is probably one of the top, you know, 10, 12 players in college baseball. But for me, the big key is just the pitching staff. You know, when I saw them in the fall, you know, guys like Cam Brown, guys like Riley Cornelio, Austin Crowe were all three very good the days I was there. You know, Cam Brown and Cornelio were both guys that, you know, last year really, really struggled at times. And both those guys have big time arms. You know, when I saw them, they were 93, 95 with wipeout secondary stuff. Austin Crowe, I don't want to lump him in with those guys because Austin Crowe was actually really, really good at the end of last year. And his numbers are actually pretty respectable. But I think, you know, he's kind of a little bit more of a proven commodity. I tell you what, if those two guys pitch to their talent level and pitch the way they did when I saw them in the fall, that is suddenly not only a good rotation, that's an elite rotation. And you throw, you know, a guy like Garrett Wright on the back end of that bullpen. That's a really, really solid foundation for your pitching staff. So for me, it all boils down to what those two guys do on the mound and starting rotation. And just, you know, how guys like Tommy Sacco or Elijah Nunez, you know, Elijah Nunez, if you remember guys at the beginning of last year, you know, at Globe Life, I'm sitting there going like, oh my God, like I love this guy. But at the end of the year, you look at his numbers and his strikeout totals went up. His batting average wasn't very good. He wasn't getting on base like he was early in the year. And he also struggled at times in the fall. So they're going to need guys like Elijah Nunez to kind of return to what he was the first half of last season. But I would say there's potential offensively, but there's certainly some uncertainty when it comes to this team offensively.
Fitzy, who are you going with in that range?
Runes, I'm taking the Beavers.
Love it.
For me, this team I'm going to go ahead and throw something out there. It doesn't make sense because if you look at our rankings, we have Stanford way higher than these teams. We have Arizona higher than Oregon State. I think Oregon State wins the Pac-12.
Ooh, I love that call.
I'm in on these Beavers. It's not maybe a sexy lineup. Okay, I get that. But like you've got some kind of winning Oregon State style players here. The Wade Meckler. What was the comp I dropped on? Wade Meckler. It was Anthony Marks from Coastal Carolina. That's what he reminds me of. He's just that little dirtbag son of a gun out there in left field that just makes everybody better. And he's just like infectious. You got to have those guys on a really good club. But, Jake Dukart kind of in that mold a little bit. Just kind of grinder Oregon State, style players. I really like Garrett Forrester. I know you like Travis Bazana a lot.
Australian. Gotta love the Australian players in college baseball.
Switch hitter too. I mean, maybe he's their Liam Spence. I like their lineup, but also their pitching staff to me is very exciting. I think with Jacob Fenix and Cooper Jerpy and Will Frisch. I mean, boy, those, here's the thing. It's kind of like, we were saying earlier, those third year guys that you're betting on, like Oklahoma State has. Okay. Maybe the track record has been a little uneven to this point, but now we're in year three. Now it's go time. We got innings under our belt. We know the talent is there with Frisch and Jerpy and Fenix. I think it's time. I think these guys are going to put it all together. And you got some nice pieces in the back end with Mitch Ferberg and Joey Munt kind of leading the way. I really like the balance of this club. I think that's the team to beat in the West.
Yeah, I love that. You know, it's so funny. Oregon State last year, they lost four of the last five Pac-12 series and almost coughed up a sure at-large bid. But then they got into that Fort Worth regional, lost their first game, and then were like nearly took DBU down, 1-3 straight. And they really showed some guts there. And I agree, Fitzy, like they check a ton of boxes. I'll just say it this way. The more you study Oregon State, the more you like them. You know, in this range, guys, Georgia, I think if we could erase that Georgia didn't make a regional this year, they'd probably be ranked higher. Like if you just looked at the talent on the roster, Georgia really stands out. I think Tennessee at 19 is very similar, where they lost some really important pieces, but they're recruiting at such a high level. I mean, Tennessee might end up having the hardest throwing rotation in the country. I mean, it's just absolute gas blower after gas blower. And then UC Irvine at 20, guys, again, just the track record is building. They're way more offensive than you think of when you think of a West Coast team. They're so well coached. UC Irvine we may be light on them at 20, honestly. I mean, that's a really good team.
I'd love to buy stock in them, but I think it's too late. I think the price has risen on Irvine after what they did last year. I mean, you watch them at the end of the year in the regional and it's like, wow, these guys are scary. I think it's a lot back. And I think you're right. We may be light at 20. I think they're very good.
Yep. KR, yep. Any team in, oh, go ahead, KR.
No, I was going to say Tennessee for me is a really interesting team and they get some nice pieces back, offensively. I think when you look at the pitching staff, Blade Tidwell to me on the front of the rotation, the times I saw him last year, you can make an argument that he could end in the spring as the best pitcher in the SEC. Like, I think he's got that good of stuff. I think you look at the back end of the bullpen, with guys like Redmond Walsh, Cameron Sewell, both those guys, seniors that threw some big innings for this team last year. But I think the thing that's going to be really interesting to me when you look at Tennessee, fellas, is Tennessee last year, I know they made a regional a couple of years ago, but I feel like Tennessee last year was kind of the aggressor at all times, right? Like they were kind of the loud, the boisterous team. And I'll be really interested to see just how this program handles, all those teams they played last year. And I'm not saying it's wrong. Like I love the chip on their shoulder mentality, but all those teams they played last year and kind of had a chip on their shoulder were a little mouthy. Guess what? they got to play all those teams again. And guess what? Those teams are going to be the hunted this year. And I'm really, really interested to see how Tony's team handles it. I think they'll be fine, but it's a different mentality going in every weekend when everybody wants to beat their brains in, as opposed to the opposite, right?
Hey, let's be honest, Kendall. Drew Gilbert is not doing bro hugs with the opponent after a series.
Correct.
Like
yeah,
that, look, that dude is an instigator.
Vibe. Yeah, it is a different vibe when somebody wants to. It's like when you walk in the bar and somebody wants to immediately punch your lights out. Sometimes they're going to hit you, and you're not going to be ready for it.
Oh, you know, guys, I think the SEC East is fascinating because those top four teams. I know we have Vanderbilt stuffed way up there, number three, but those top four teams could finish in any order. And I'm not so sure. I don't like Georgia the best of the bunch. And certainly Florida, you know, the reason they're not higher is because they are a little young on the mound, but boy, the talent is elite. And I think by the end of the year, they're going to be super dangerous. But Georgia, I mean, I saw them match up against Florida in the fall, and both teams threw basically most of their good arms. And it was a really good look at both of these teams. And I walked out thinking, wow, Georgia's impressive. You know, and again, one inning stints for these arms. Okay. It's not like you're watching somebody go through the lineup a couple of times, but I mean, Jonathan Cannon has been around the block now. It's a first round talent with a couple of years experience atop your rotation. And Liam Solomon, big physical lefty in number two spot. Dylan Ross, the best junior college transfer in the country, big time power stuff. If that's your rotation with Dave, maybe Dylan Rokos, if you need him as a very talented lefty. Again, we talk about starting pitching being at a premium. Georgia's got it. And again, some very deep pitching staff. It's another one of these deep balanced rosters that has these winning players. Like we talked about Oregon State a minute ago, and you got the Tate brothers who've been around, and you know, the Josh McAllisters, the Cheney Rogers. These guys are just, they're veteran, they're old, they're good winning baseball players. And maybe it's not the sexiest lineup, but I think Georgia, this is the year they put this on the board too, guys. Georgia's going to Omaha. It's the year they break through.
I love it. You know what's funny, boys? Fitzy, when you were just saying that about the SEC East, you know, Kendall made an awesome point a second ago about how Tennessee's not sneaking up on people anymore. They're getting everybody's best punch. You know who is sneaking up on people this year? Stinking Florida. The Gators are going to sneak up on people this year. Like I feel like everybody's asleep on Florida, and I get it. Last year was the hottest of hot messes, but they still hosted a regional and it was a complete flame out. But think about how crazy that is, how talented that Florida roster is. And most of the country is asleep on the Gators. That is just amazing and dangerous, by the way.
Well said.
Kendall, what do you got on 21-25? We're going to do 21-25. I can't wait to get to our next 10. I'll take our next 10 and they should have their own tournament. That group can play with anybody, but KR, let's stay in 21-25.
Well, you know, I think when you look at Dallas Baptist, I mean, I hope for my man, Dan Huefner, they get to Omaha at some point. I think they will. They were so close last year against Virginia. And of course, Virginia had those heroics. But I think when you look at this DBU team, they're going to be ready this year. You know, I think when you look at these guys offensively, you know, getting your boy Ryan Robleski back, you know, Blaine Jones at shortstop, you know, Jace Grady's just an electric player. You know, I sat in the cage with Heath in the fall and watched him. And I mean, he was like, the exit velocity was triple digits several times in the cage. And he's just a really, really good looking player out of Elgin, Texas, outside of Austin. And, you know, Andrew Benefield, you know, the former, the Louisville kickback, I mean, just a really impressive physical specimen over at third base. I mean, I was very impressed with him the day I was there in the fall. And so, you know, I think, you know, offensively they're well-tooled. I think when you look at these guys from a pitching standpoint, you know, Luke Eldred, we talk so much about, you know, having experience. You know, Luke Eldred's had a lot of innings, you know, with the, you know, Patriots. You look at, you know, a guy like Connor McKay, the junior college transfer, you know, kind of had some ups and downs in the fall because of injuries, but, you know, he's a guy that can get up to 90, 95, 97 with his fastball. You know, Jacob Metter, you know, he's a guy at TCU that I think all three of us really liked at one point. Things didn't kind of pan out at TCU. But again, a guy, you know, 94, 91, 94 from the right side with a big time flashing plus changeup. And so, you know, you put him in there as a potential number three starter. That's a really solid rotation. And with those offensive pieces, DBU has a chance to get back to a super regional. And obviously at this point has a chance to get to Omaha as well. It's going to happen. It's a lot like Arkansas win the national championship. DBU will get to Omaha. It's more so just a matter of when at this point.
You know, it's
like East Carolina.
Yes, that's it. They're all absolutely in that same class, just different levels. The Arkansas analogy is really good too. I'm going to segue us to LSU for a second. Dan Fitzgerald, who was the recruiting coordinator at DBU, mm-hmm. That, you know, really has put together some incredible rosters, and he's a future head coach. You know, Fitz is a guy we think very highly of. LSU's interesting at eight just because, can you imagine being a pitching coach in the SEC? What a nightmare this year is going to be. Some of the offenses you're going to have to craft a pitching plan for, and LSU is one of them. Even if they didn't get Jacob Berry in the transfer market, that offense was going to be a complete nightmare. And, you know, guys like Cade Beloso, who was a three-hole hitter 2 years ago, he'll be lucky if he's hitting eighth this year. I mean, that's how good this lineup is. So, you know, but obviously LSU's got question marks on the mound. They'll be interesting. They'll get more than their share of attention from us this year. Fitzy, 21 through 25, who's a team that jumps out at you?
I got to lump the three ACC teams in here real quickly together. Please. Because we talked about the ACC being wide open. And again, if you told me at the end of the year, Georgia Tech, Duke, or Miami wound up winning the league, I wouldn't be surprised. You know, I mean, these teams are all really talented. I think Georgia Tech is, it for me, in the discussion with like an Ole Miss or an Arkansas, is one of the most explosive offensive teams in the country. It's just a matter of, you know, can they get those pieces to fall into place on the mound? I mean, if you're relying on Marquise Grissom and Zach Maxwell to be your 1-2 punch in the rotation, boy, it's two really good arms. And so is Court Rodig, potentially your Sunday guy, really good arms, but can they put all together? And so that's the question mark with Georgia Tech. And is the defense going to be improved? I'm buying. I do like Georgia Tech's roster a lot. And again, the experience factor. Duke, you know, maybe took a little ding when they lost Henry Williams to Tommy John surgery, but even so, I think they're actually built very similarly to NC State, where, you know, you've got what should be a great 1-2 punch with Marcus Johnson moving into the rotation, and then Luke Fox, very high on those two guys, are high end talents. It's a deep and kind of experienced bullpen. The question, like NC State, though, you've got a freshman catcher and a freshman shortstop. Now, Alex Mooney is probably the best freshman shortstop in the country. So, you know, I feel good about that, but nonetheless, you know, those are two positions you'd like to have a little bit more experience. And this is a younger team in certain spots. And then Miami, the pitching looks very exciting. You know, and that certainly should be their strength. But can Palmquist make that transition from the back of the bullpen into the Friday night starter job? I believe he can. I mean, we're giving Landon Sims the benefit of the doubt. Why wouldn't we give Palmquist the benefit of the doubt? You look at that crazy strikeout to walk ratio. I mean, the guy just smothers the strike zone. I think he'll do just fine. But you know, certainly they've got firepower on the mound. Just a matter of how the lineup pieces, you know, come together. But all those teams are very dangerous, and I think the ACC race is going to be fascinating to watch.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, yeah, like just like the, as you've, I've heard you talk about Miami, Fitzy, my takeaway is always, man, they're really going to pitch. And Yo-Yo Morales is a Team USA type of player, right? Like that. Now, can they fill in enough guys around him so he's not having to draw 80 walks this year? That's interesting. I'll give you guys an analogy for Long Beach State, who I'm so excited we got in here. You know, remember, they were 15-2 down the stretch last year. If the season was 2 weeks longer, they're a regional team. And California was just a, you know, a zoo as far as dealing with the pandemic last year. Really challenging for them. You know, Long Beach State is, they're the Iceman from Top Gun. They just play, they're like the old Fullerton teams. They play the cleanest of clean brand of baseball. They wait for you to make a mistake, and you will make a mistake, and then they just win. And you know, I would say Long Beach is, they're more talented than that. They're a really interesting team. They're old, they're very complete, and they just play that beautiful West Coast style of baseball that always plays up in the postseason. So Long Beach, I think, is going to be a real factor. And again, as long as Eric Valenzuela is there, that program's just going to keep ascending. They just keep locking in the talent. This guy's an elite recruiter. They're going to play with an edge. I mean, Long Beach is a really exciting program right now. All right, let's do the top 10. KR, give me a team from the top, or the top 10, the next 10. Who, some of these teams may end up in the top 10 when it's all said and done. This is a really good group. Give me a team from the next 10, KR, that jumped out at you.
I think the really interesting team for me is Oklahoma. I think when you look at the Sooners, you know, you look at those guys last year and the week rotation didn't pan out. Some of the veterans they had offensively We just weren't very good. But I think when you look at this Oklahoma team, you know, Jake Bennett certainly has some big time potential from the left side. Chaz Martinez, a junior college transfer, was outstanding in the fall. I want to say I was told the other day that he was up to 97 with wipeout stuff. They've got him slated as the number two, number three starter right now. And then you throw a guy like Braden Carmichael, who, as you saw against Arkansas, the midweek game you did, you know, has a big time changeup, you know, has some velocity in his fastball as well. So they've got some decent pieces on the mound. And, you know, I think when you look at these guys, you know, offensively getting Peyton Graham back, you know, Tanner Treadaway back as a redshirt senior, I think is huge for those guys. And, you know, we'll also see, you know, if a guy like Brett Squires can kind of take a big step forward. You know, Squires had very high acclaim when he arrived in Norman, hit around 270 with six home runs. He certainly has a lot more power potential than six home runs. So I'll be interested to see if he takes a step forward. And then let's not forget about Jimmy Crooks. We talked about Logan Tanner earlier, one of the better catchers in college baseball. You know, a guy like Jimmy Crooks isn't that far behind. He's a really good backstop. He can really hit. And he's a guy that, you know, is certainly an X factor for the Sooners. So I think OU, after disappointing last year, I think OU is going to surprise some people this year.
So Fitzy, I don't want to pick your pocket, but I'm going to do two. You know, for me, I love it when programs kind of get a shtick or they get a niche or something that they kind of do. And so I'm going to take the first two on this, Campbell and Liberty, real quick. Campbell is like the Stony Brook, the Kent State, the Coastal, where they're just dominating a league, ironically, the Big South, and they're just in a regional every single year. And it's not new for them. And it's not, their players are comfortable there. And you just keep popping regionals like that, you're going to get out of a regional. And then you got a team like that that's used to winning two out of three is not that unusual for them. So I'm just like Campbell, you know, Zach Nato, their shortstop, is a stud. He's a great player. But the thing about Campbell is under Justin Hare, that program just continues to build the momentum. Liberty, here's their stick as I observe it. You do not want to be behind Liberty in the fifth inning because you're going to see four crazy arms coming out of that bullpen. Like every coach I've talked to says, man, in the first half of a game against Liberty, you are sweating bullets because if you ain't scoring, you're going home the loser that night. So I love that. Scott Jackson, those guys building from the back. And I know those are teams you're really familiar with, Fitzy. So feel free to pile on there, but also lead us into another team.
Yeah, I was heartbroken not to have Campbell in our top 25 and Southern Miss is the other one. Those are the two teams that, like, I walking away from them this fall, I was like, wow, you know, these are teams that I feel like I have some conviction on. Campbell, I mean, you mentioned Zach Nato. That's one thing is for your mid-major program, and you've got one of the best shortstops in the country, and you've got the makings of a really good pitching staff with Thomas Harrington and Cade Kuehler and Cade Boxrucker. I mean, so big time arms, guys. These are all big time arms that could go in the top 50, you know, top 50 picks in the next 2 years. It's like, I want to put my name out there and be out there with these guys. I really wish we had, yes. I wish we had room to rank them, but yes. Boy, cause they're going to be good. And, you know, Southern Miss too, I walked away in the fall and is one of those days where like the stars align and you see almost their entire pitching staff in a 9-inning scrimmage, you know, an inner squad where you got 18 guys going at each other. Right. It's like, I walked away thinking, oh, they got depth on the mound. You know, I know they lost, you know, your big 1-2 punch with Hunter Stanley and Walker Powell. And that's why they're not in the top 25 is they need guys to kind of replace those two guys and establish themselves. But boy, they got candidates, you know, between Ben Etheridge and Hurston Waldrop, who's got huge stuff. And as a sophomore, is a guy that I think is going to come into his own this year. Drew Boyd, I think they were expecting big things from last year. I think this year he really will put it together. Quality lefty with pitchability. And then Hunter Riggins, a grad transfer. That's a nice group there. You know, the Rogers kid is a junior college transfer. They got a lot of options on the mound. It's a very deep pitching staff with, again, variety and different kinds of looks. And a veteran, you know, position player group with the Count of Montenegro, of course. And his brother coming in now as a JUCO transfer catcher, give them some depth at that position. But I mean, there's names here that if you've seen Southern Miss the last few years, you know these names: Will McGillis, Danny Lynch, you know, Dustin Dickerson, Reese Ewing. These are experienced winning ball players. This team's going to be very good.
So interesting. As I go through this, I'm going to try and one line some of these teams. So think about this for Louisville, guys. Like, I think it's, we were uncomfortable. I'll speak for the group. We were uncomfortable not ranking Louisville, but the truth is their key players don't have much track record. Some of them have spotty track records, but you know who does have track record? Dan McDonald and that coaching staff. And so I did, you know, like, and now we're giving Dan McDonald a chip on his shoulder. We're giving him something to put on his bulletin board. I mean, look out, you know, like, and not just we, I mean, Louisville's hard to rank right now because last year ended poorly. A lot of guys going to be in big roles with limited track record, you know, hey, another blue blood program like that. UCLA didn't make our top 25. They're in this next 10, but they are the number one newcomer class in the country that we ranked with PBR. And I mean, that those are four elite freshmen. And you guys know, I texted a lot of people on the West Coast saying, hey, who are going to be the best clubs out here? And people just kept jamming UCLA down my throat. They just kept saying, like, you understand, those kids are so good, even though they're freshmen, and you got to account for John Savage. You know, I think about UC Santa Barbara not making the top 25, guys. It's going to be a really, really good year in the Big West. You know, Cal Poly's got two of the best players in the country. Fullerton, I think, is going to rebound. Cal State Northridge's got a little mojo going. So, you know, I'll say this about Santa Barbara. If Michael McGreevy and Rodney Boone did not depart, we're probably ranking them. But those are such loud departures that it just puts a cloud over the rest of the roster. UC Santa Barbara is really good. Go ahead, Fitzy.
It's comparable to Southern Miss, right? Like, I think Southern Miss is really good, but you lose, you know, Hunter Stanley and Walker Powell, and it's like, okay, you know, like, it just, there's something to prove there. I think the same is true with Santa Barbara.
Yep. The, you know, I think about Nebraska. We struggled to not rank them. I really like Michigan too. La Tech. Conference USA had a huge year last year. I'll give you guys a comp for Oregon. To me, it's Tennessee Light right now, and it's not going to be light for long. Like, I think I see Mark Wazakowski in the same vein as Tony Vitello, where he's really good. It's an elite recruiting program. And the other thing Waz did that Tony Vitello did is just really built a great coaching staff. And so you've got this combination, this lethal combination of influx of talent, constant talent upgrade with really good coaching. I mean, you know, again, you're going to win. Oregon had big losses. They lost their top three hitters in their whole rotation. So it made them unrankable, if you will. But man, I would love to buy stock in that program for sure.
Well said.
Yes. KR, you went this whole podcast and I feel like you didn't hate on anybody. I mean, let's call a fish a fish. I thought you were very
calm
positive
before the storm runes.
your Twitter feed,
it's preseason, man. I love everybody in the preseason. It takes me a couple of weeks to get in the hating mood.
Somebody responded to you on Twitter, Kendall, saying that we were gonna rank Hale State the Bulldogs 22nd. I mean, come on, that's taking the hate too far, right?
Well, I mean, I also responded to somebody and said that I'm still waiting for Coach Bianco's check to clear so I can increase Ole Miss's chances in the rankings. So
I can't wait to see my feed tomorrow when the Hale State fans see Vanderbilt's ahead of them.
That's not going to be well received.
They're not.
I'm sending everybody to you.
Yeah. Hey, I don't know when this preseason top 25 chat is scheduled for, boys, but I'm unavailable.
Well, I had a Mississippi State fan earlier get mad that we had them seventh in the preseason last year, as if that was entirely too low.
Disrespectful.
Very disrespectful. I've never seen such disrespect.
I want to come clean. No credibility. I picked Stanford ninth in the Pac-12 last year. I've said it on back-to-back podcasts now. My credibility isn't at an all-time low. So we can only go up from here. We're going to rebuild the program. Like a phoenix, we will rise again, Fitzy.
Let's get there after this. Will be a big bounce back year for us.
That's right. Love it. Gentlemen, well done. That was really fun. The rankings were really fun. It is go time. It is season preview time. As Fitzy would say, we are creating copy, baby. That's what we are doing. So I want to say thanks again to our friends at Netting Professionals, the sponsors of the top 25 this year. Really appreciate those guys. And that's it. We'll be it's go time. Check out the website every day. Great stuff on there every single day. And we will podcast again soon. And then that's it. Boys, good night. Well done. And we will talk to you guys next time.